Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Postgraduate Podcast. I'm your host, Alex. Let's jump right in. So, what is blockchain technology? Essentially, it's a solution to the problem of centralization. Centralization is when something is controlled by an authority that everyone respects. And in recent times, people have noticed that some central authorities have way too much power over the system that they legitimize, and that they're borderline unaccountable to anyone. So, the public have decided to move to decentralized systems. But how does one create a system that allows creation, verification, and updating of records by everyone without the need for a centralized authority? So you need five things. Number one, a peer-to-peer network, which is, you know, open to anyone and everyone. Number two, cryptography to encrypt and verify messages and prove the authenticity of your own messages. Number three, consensus algorithms. So basically rules, like proof of work, proof of stake, but I'll explain that later. Number four, punishment and reward. So in this case, the reward is a token or coin, and punishment is, you know, no reward, right? And then number five is market adoption. So the more people use the system, the higher the decentralization of the blockchain. I need around, like, I think 1,000 people plus to become, like, you know, officially decentralized. So let's jump right in. Bitcoin is the first usage of this blockchain technology created to decentralize money and, like, the financial world, essentially. So when sending money to someone else, it must go through a bank. The money has a serial number that the bank confirms is legitimate. Then they, you know, check your accounts to see that it's all there. And then they update their ledger, which is simply just all the information they have containing people's balances and previous transactions, and then send that money to the other person. And blockchain technology allows this to happen without the use of a bank. So the main issue that people had with banks is that they could just be like, and bang, $1 trillion have just appeared out of thin air. And that is, you know, ridiculous to say the least. So, you know, the public has decided to go for decentralized systems. And as I said, Bitcoin is the first one to come about. And essentially, blockchain network is made up of nodes, which are simply just computers that confirm, spread, and store the list of transactions that were ever made. And this list consists of groups of transactions, which are known as blocks. Once one block is full of transactions, like once it's reached this capacity, it gets, you know, sent off, and then the next one begins. And this entire list is known as the blockchain, a chain of blocks of transactions. So all the nodes are connected to each other via the network, via the internet, essentially. And this allows them to, you know, keep up to date and communicate with each other. And you can turn your computer into a full node by simply going on bitcoin.org/en/full-node, and then you should be somewhere there. But basically, it just downloads a software onto your computer, and then that's the software that does the whole, you know, Bitcoin network thing. So let me explain in a bit more detail. When you buy Bitcoin, right, or when you send Bitcoin, the transaction is sent into the network to all the nodes. So anyone can be in this network and participate in updating the ledger. All they need to do is guess a number known as the hash that solves a math equation problem that is generated by the system. As in, you, if you solve the math problem, then you get to, you know, update the ledger with the newest block. These people are known as miners, and all miners are nodes, although not all nodes are miners, because some nodes are there to simply verify and spread their transactions. Miner nodes also do the verification and spread the information to other nodes. They just additionally solve the math puzzle. And mining is done by, you know, a computer, by a software, and the more powerful the computer is, the more guesses per second it can make, which is known as a hash rate. Once the correct answer is found, the pending transactions that miner received slash chose from the network plus the solution are sent to all the other nodes to confirm and validate the new block as legitimate. All this means is that they check that nobody's balance has gone up somehow, like unlawfully, and that nobody sent money that they didn't have, etc. And again, this is done just like automatically. Once validated by other nodes, that miner gets the credit for confirming the latest block of transactions, which gives him the reward. Who gives him the reward, you may ask? Well, the algorithm in the blockchain itself. This whole concept is stupidly known as proof of work, which is synonymous to solve the puzzle and you'll get the reward. And listen, I don't know why it's called proof of work. It's just not the grammatically just so incorrect. But either way, all the other nodes in the network update their own Bitcoin ledger with this new block, meaning that their list of transactions just gets bigger. Upon receiving the updated and verified blockchain, the miner nodes continue and they try to solve the new math problem by, you know, finding the right hash. If more than one miner found the correct solution at the same time, then other miners around them will accept whatever block they received first from the network, and then they'll confirm that block and will start working on, you know, the new list of transactions. So if a miner in China and one in America found the solution to the latest block at the same time, then the nodes which are geographically closest to them will receive the, you know, subsequently different, you know, blocks of different list of transactions, and they will, and those miners will start working on, you know, those blocks, and then whatever one of the two simultaneously existing blocks gets solved first, that chain of now two blocks becomes the new addition to the blockchain, and the other block gets essentially orphaned, so just deleted. Hence, you can get what's known as a double spend. You may have seen that in the news recently, where it seems like you pay twice, although in reality, you know, the other transaction block just got deleted. And if your transaction was in that block, then once it's deleted, it just has to wait until, you know, the next block picks it up, I guess. And yeah, so if you want to, for instance, you know, send someone more money than you actually have, you'll need to update like over the majority of the network. So over the majority of all of the ledgers, because, you know, every node has their own copy of the ledger. So you'll need to update the majority of those to state that you now have this new amount of money. Whereas before, all you had to do is go to the bank and be like, oh, let me just search Alex. Yep, just add 1 million. Bing, that's it. Obviously not that simple, but pretty much it is, which is why, you know, we have Bitcoin. So this is impossible to do in the Bitcoin network unless you have control over the, you know, majority of the nodes in the network, as I've said. So moving on, the reward consists of the system generating a fixed, so the algorithm generating a fixed amount of bitcoins, which are rewarded to the miner for, you know, solving the math problem, which is currently 6.25 bitcoins, which is essentially just a way for the, you know, the algorithm to pay the miners for the excessive like electricity usage that they, that their computers, you know, consume for trying to guess the number that solves the problem. And they get that reward, and then they also get the transaction fees from the block. And what a halvening is what halves the reward that these miners get. So now they're on 6.25. Before in 2016, they were on, well, the past 4 years, they were on 12.5 bitcoins, and then there were 25 bitcoins before that. And the difficulty of the mining increases with the number of miners there are. So this is to create an average of one new block per every 10 minutes. So, you know, the more miners there are, the more chances that someone will guess the right hash, you know, quicker. So the difficulty increases, and therefore balancing out. One way to participate in the mining process, so essentially what you do is you just download the software, but obviously, as I've said, it's incredibly difficult, especially with the amount of miners that there are now. So one way to participate for it, for someone like, you know, you and me, is just an average Joe with an average computer, in the face of already incredibly strenuous difficulty of the math problem, is via joining a Bitcoin mining pool. So it's a pool of different nodes all working together to essentially mine Bitcoin, and then if they win, then the reward gets split up between the members, you know, relative to how much processing power each of them contributed to the pool. So for the person sending the Bitcoin, this is where they have to wait for confirmations from other nodes. Since a block has limited storage of, I believe, around 1 megabyte, the transactions with higher transaction fees get on the block ahead of those with lower fees. So the ones with lower fees essentially have to wait until a block arrives that's, you know, just more empty. So for example, if the block is a bus and a higher transaction fee is basically just a higher bribe to the bus driver, he'll let you on before others. And, you know, if the bus is full, then you need to wait until the next bus. And this happens automatically. So the miners, they don't like choose what transactions they get. They just get the transactions. And then the ones with the highest fees, they, you know, get on the bus. So one confirmation means one block has been accepted by the network, and two confirmations means that the next block has also been accepted in the, you know, by the network. So again, if we have the issue of two miners validating the block at the same time, then once the other miners mine the next block on, you know, that one of those two blocks, then, as I said before, so the one with the now two blocks becomes the official addition to the blockchain. And that's why most exchanges tell you to wait for at least two confirmations, because that means that your transaction is not in a potentially orphaned block. So another keyword is SPVs, so simple payment verifications. So basically, to confirm a transaction, nodes download the entire blockchain and, you know, do their confirmation. These are known as full nodes, and this is what the Bitcoin network consists of. So to reiterate, these can be miner nodes or just full nodes that are simply out there to verify and spread the transactions. There are also essentially client-side lightweight nodes, or those nodes that essentially don't download the entire blockchain, but rather only the summary at the top of the block, simply to check if your particular transaction is included in the block and then in the next block, etc. So this is what an SPV wallet is. A wallet on your PCs where you can hold crypto coins that can receive confirmations of your transactions by using only a fraction of the computing power, essentially. Lightweight nodes are essentially, you know, as I said, client side, and they only confirm if the transaction, if your transaction is in, you know, the most recent block. Full nodes, on the other hand, confirm the legitimacy of the block, I believe, by comparing it to the previous block, essentially, just to make sure that, you know, no one all of a sudden has more money out of thin air. And so they confirm that, and then they just add it to the blockchain after, you know, if they find the solution, if they find the hash. So we have a miner node who compiles the transactions and solves the puzzle and then sends the information to all the other nodes, full and lightweight. Then whilst the full nodes verify the legitimacy of the blockchain and spread the word, the lightweight nodes, i.e. your computer wallet, simply confirm whether your transaction was in that block or not, hence they're used for, you know, wallets rather than running the entire Bitcoin network. Next thing, we have the proof of work, as I said, which literally just means whoever solves the puzzle gets the credit for writing the next block, which means they, you know, get the reward. This requires a lot of computational power, and the more miners there are, the more power is required, because, you know, the hash gets harder to get. This also means that eventually, once all the Bitcoins have been allocated and the max supply of 21 million coins reached, the miners will only get rewarded via transaction fees, and this may not be enough for some miners to cover electricity costs, and a lot of them will stop eventually, but potentially causing one of the biggest issues for Bitcoin, Bitcoin's future, whereby over 51% of all miners in the network could be run by one entity, so like by one mining pool, for instance. And this allows for the faking of the ledger that I mentioned before as impossible, but like in a unique way, as far as I understand. So I believe the issue arises because nodes only confirm the latest block against the transactions of the block before it. So for example, if I have £100, then I can't magically send £150 because, you know, it says on the ledger that I only have £100. So therefore that transaction, you know, will just get cancelled. So in this 51% attack, what happens is this entity only receives transaction data but doesn't actually send anything back out into the network. And I believe the issue occurs when this entity, having by far the most processing power, will solve the first math problem and then not tell the network, and then, you know, confirm the block within itself because they have over 50% of all the nodes, and then they will solve the second maths problem and thus create the second block, and only then upload those two now blocks to the network. Thereby, other nodes, this can be done by just, you know, turning off your uploading internet rather than turning off your downloading internet, I guess, if that makes sense. So thereby, the other nodes, they check the latest block and see that everything between the latest block and the second to last block is fine, so they change their entire Bitcoin ledger. But they do not see that the second block and the third to last block have different statements, if you get me. So they just, this entity just adds more Bitcoin to itself somehow, I don't know how, or like they double spend or something like that. I don't know the ins and outs perfectly, but like basically they somehow update the ledger, you know, unlawfully, and then the next the next block that they mine is all correct based on, you know, the previous block. And then these, the other nodes, you know, they see that, you know, the latest two blocks, they're everything's fine between them, and then they accept it because they don't check the third to last block. And I believe that's how it works. And but, you know, regardless, if you want to confirm, do so. But this is known as the 51% attack, and it is, I think, the biggest issue for Bitcoin's, you know, future, essentially. So hence other cryptos, specifically Ethereum, have came up with the idea of proof of stake. So as a miner, you deposit funds, so like a stake, onto the network, and then the algorithm picks who gets to create the next few blocks by weighing out who has more staked coins, usually multiplied by whose coins have been staked for longest, so like the amount of days that you've been waiting for, essentially, and a bit of randomization. It also doesn't allow the same miner to create the next block potentially like twice in a row, which ensures that basically the chances of a monopoly are close to nothing. So yeah, moving swiftly to Ethereum. So Ethereum is one of the biggest, you know, developers, I suppose, and is currently in second place by popularity. It is what a browser is to the internet, I suppose. So Bitcoin is a new decentralized currency that works to become the new version of gold, whereas Ethereum is a platform that allows others to use blockchain technology without too much hassle for whatever purpose they need, because they use the Ethereum network. So the Ethereum network already has the five necessities needed for, you know, blockchain technology, and essentially is basically a DIY platform for dApps, which are decentralized applications, which uses the coding language Solidity. So Solidity is used to write what's known as smart contracts, which is basically simply just a series of if X then Y, a series of if then rules that can carry out a task. So these rules form the decentralized applications, you know, dApps. So for instance, if Jamie wants to buy a stock, they have to go to the stock market, the stock market broker, right? And then buy the stock through the broker. However, with a dApp, all they have to do is they pay directly to the, you know, the company using the, you know, a dApp, and then they get, you know, the stock. Basically, it just eliminates the third party, essentially, right? And so that is known as a smart contract, and the currency the Ethereum network uses is Ether, which is the coin that you can buy via an exchange, and that's the one that's worth like £1,000 now. And it is also, you know, the one that is rewarded for the creation of a new block of transactions, just like, you know, you get a reward in Bitcoin. So other companies that, you know, make dApps on the Ethereum network will use their own coins, and then those coins can be converted into Ether and then into real money, and then, you know, vice versa as well. So this means that anyone that wants to make a dApp just has to use Solidity to code it and then upload it to the Ethereum network, and bang, you have yourself a decentralized system that can carry out a simple set of rules. So as I said, for example, if you want to buy a stock, you don't have to go to the broker, right? So Ethereum is currently proof of work, but like just like Bitcoin, but with Ethereum 2.0, they're going to move to a proof of stake network, and yeah, essentially just unify their existing one with this new one, and, you know, bada bing, bada boom, now Ethereum is a proof of stake system. And this is currently being developed, and it's expected to be released in 2021 or 22, something like that. So the way Ethereum 2.0 proof of stake will work is by locking up specifically 32 Ether coins on a node as your stake, you know, as your deposit. You can't lock any more or any less, I believe. But if you want to lock more, then you have to use another computer, and then you run the Ethereum blockchain, you know, software on your PC, and it does the rest. So just, it's exactly the same as Bitcoin. It's just that instead of trying to solve a puzzle, you just deposit some coins, and then, yeah, and then, you know, the software picks you, and then that's it. And the reward you get is Ethereum's crypto coin, Ether, and then the miner, which, as I said, in the proof of stake system is called a forger, who got to create the next block because they were selected by the algorithm, gets the transaction fee as the reward, and also a percent of newly created Ether based on how much percent they staked to begin with out of all the Ether staked in total by all the forgers. And as I've said, so similar to Bitcoin, or not similar, but exactly the same as in the Bitcoin system, the way that you confirm transactions is, you know, the software literally just checks that there's no, like, sudden numbers out of thin air, you get me? And yeah, so Bitcoin miners, they get 6.25 Bitcoins plus the transaction fees, whereas Ether forgers will get a percentage of the new Ether created plus transaction fees. I'm not entirely sure how this, you know, new ether will come about in the proof of stake system, but I know it comes from the algorithm, same as with Bitcoin. And yeah, and also the more nodes there are staking ether, the lower the reward will be, because obviously like your staked amount as a percent of the total staked amount becomes less. Bitcoin has a transactions per second speed, TPS, of around 4.7, and because each block takes around 10 minutes to, you know, confirm, that means that it's just about under 3,000 transactions per block, which is 1 megabyte, I don't know if I said earlier, 1 megabyte of data. And Ethereum 1.0 is currently at around 15 TPS, whereas Ethereum 2.0 will be around 100,000 TPS due to the proof of stake system not needing to, you know, waste time solving any math puzzles, you know, using essentially just guesses. So if you want to stake Ether and become a node for Ethereum, it will be difficult, seeing as there's currently only like 900 new nodes allowed a day, with I think like a 30,000 people waiting list, and you need like a dedicated computer to do it. Not to mention the, you know, 32 ETH Ether stake, which is £32,000 right now. So also, the only time you can cash out your rewarded Ether is only after the merger of ETH 1.0 and 2.0, known as I said, the docking, which will be only in a couple of years, so it's not probably, you know, profitable in the short run at all. And there are other ways to do it though. So the best way is to stake via staking services supplied by exchanges. So you can use the funds you already have on the exchange, and then they, some of them will let you stake as little, you know, as little amount as you have for a small fee. And also, plus like some exchanges, they let you cash out your earnings prior to the docking. On the other hand, you don't have any control over your coins, as the exchange has, you know, your staked Ether, not you, which to people with a lot of coins could be a bit problematic. There's also staking pools, which work the same as mining pools for Bitcoin, but for staking Ethereum. You know, you get together, stake together, allowing you to stake a little amount. But then you must do proper research, because apparently this is a lot more risky than an official exchange for whatever reason. But yeah, that pretty much covers everything you need to know regarding blockchain, Bitcoin and Ethereum. And what's left is all like the additional information that I don't think will be of use to anyone other than programmers. And yeah, and then all the other altcoins as well and their purposes. So these include like protocol coins, utility tokens, security tokens, non-fungible tokens, digital finance, and I believe there's a couple more. I'm not sure what like most of these are myself, so don't worry. But yeah, I'll leave that research to you either way. And then you can look forward, however, to me discussing some of these with some of my friends in the future episodes. So I already have a few episodes planned where I'll be discussing some other altcoins, which I feel like will be, you know, the next big thing, essentially. And yeah, that's it. Thank you for listening. You know, hope you enjoyed it. Hope, you know, the quality's fine. If you have any questions, just message me on Instagram. I'm pretty sure everyone listening will have me on Instagram. And in my bio, I have the link to join my Discord server, which I keep promoting. It's just basically a place for people to come together, discuss, share information they find, share the things that they're investing in, things that they're buying, selling. It's just, and it has so much information. It's incredible. I'm really proud of what it's become. So thank you to everyone who's already on there. Feel free to join. Ask anyone any questions. You know, it's all good. And yeah, so thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great day.